Something that's also worth mentioning, if you think back to the first extract you saw, where you had lots of slogans advocating violence, and you know, I think there was a quote saying, "A man without hatred is a man without triumph," or something like that. And, the advocacy of insurrection and violence. This film was very much made in that, with that ethos as well. The idea of political terror was not something seen as negative, something negative, yes, by the Red Army or you know, these filmmakers. Political violence was seen as a legitimate form of armed struggle. Yeah, okay. One moment. Okay, so I've given you an overview, let's say, of the global context of where militant cinema emerged and some examples of different countries, manifestations of militant cinema, and also we've seen how they interact with one another and the causes interact and the filmmakers' network. But militant cinema today, is there a militant cinema today? And this can be debated. My opinion is yes, there is a militant cinema today. But the context in which it exists is somewhat different to the context in which it emerged from. At the beginning, we talked about the idea of third world liberation, and this was a third world liberation from colonial forces and imperialism. Yes, foreign imperialism and foreign colonial forces, and the liberation of the third world from those entities. But if we take things to a contemporary context and we think of... And specifically, going back again, this was a third world liberation specifically, usually, against the West, yes? Western imperialism, Western powers. But I want to bring this now to the present day. And those of you who may be involved with activist movements today, that exist today in not just third world countries, but other parts of the world, there are a lot of movements today, a lot of situations where people are in the third world, for example, are rising up against dictatorships. These dictatorships are not necessarily any longer supported by the West. In fact, they may be supported by other non-Western regimes. So there is a kind of shift. There's definitely a shift in the perspectives and the context of where this, if we're talking about a contemporary militant cinema, where is it emerging? I would say it's emerging amongst some of these populations and countries that are fighting against tyranny and totalitarian regimes in a more localized way, but internationally, there's more of a kind of multitude of different powers now around the globe that are maybe competing against one another. But the tyranny and the misery that they subject populations to is still there. So if there is a third world liberation movement today, I would say perhaps there are different movements. And one of the main third world liberation movements is a liberation from... let's say local dictatorship. I want to here talk about another manifesto. Okay, this is a more contemporary manifesto. It was written in 2012. This manifesto specifically talks about, or it comes from the context of the civil uprising in Syria that started in 2011. And this manifesto is known as the Dignified Image. Okay, it was written by, a political theorist called Chad Elias. And it was written after a year of civil protest in Syria, anti-regime protest in Syria, where civilians were going into the streets and protesting. And these protests were being documented on mobile phone videos. So what happened was, in Syria, the regime decided to ban all foreign journalists from getting into Syria at that time. So what happened was, you had a situation where citizens were going into the street, filming these protests, often on very low resolution cameras, very pixelated, very shaky. Yeah, these are not filmmakers. These are the ordinary citizen, ordinary person just filming. They would come under fire by regime snipers, so they'd be running around with their cameras trying to document things. And as a result, you get a lot of shaky images, very low res, very pixelated, yes? But what emerged was, what happened is these citizens began to upload these very low res images onto the internet. And then these images were picked up by news channels around the world. So a question emerges here. Can this be considered, and you may agree, you may disagree, but it's a question. Can this be considered a new form of cinema if we look at it collectively? Is this a new form of a political cinema that emerges? Yes, a collection, a movement, or a collection of all of these disparate images of protest. And it's in this context that Chad Elias wrote this manifesto. And here are the key points of it. First of all, he said image quality can no longer be considered a metric of reliability or truth. And he makes this point because in the context of mobile phone footage and protest, you had a lot of people from the other side, yes, supporters of the regime, and even foreign supporters of the regime, for example, Russian state media channels or Iranian state media channels, who are all supportive of the regime in Syria. These channels were disseminating this idea that, oh, all this video footage we see from Syria is just fake. It's just propaganda created by people who are being funded by the CIA, and it's a conspiracy against the revolutionary Assad regime in Syria. So they were trying to claim that because the images were shaky and low res, we're not able to see anything, and therefore we cannot rely on these images. So if we have footage, for example, of people kind of running away and the camera's going like this, and then you can hear sniper fire in the background, which is in a way evidence of the regime sniping against protesters. The other side was saying, no, this is not reliable because the footage is amateur, it's pixelated, it doesn't show us anything. These are poor images. But what Chad Elias is saying, he's saying, look, the quality of the image is not where the value of this footage lies. Image quality is not a metric of reliability, it's not a metric of truth. He said, rather, this new footage, this cell phone footage, is actually a medium through which opens up a new space of civic participation. And this is very profound, because in the context of Syria, there is no such thing as civic participation. Yes, as a civilian, you don't have any rights to voice your feelings or your opinions. And to go out into the streets and film something with your cell phone is literally against the law in Syria, specifically for protests, yes? If the, and protests themselves are generally not allowed to happen unless they are given permission by the regime and organized by the regime. So Chad Elias is saying that the very act of going into a protest and filming in a context where civil participation is denied, that very act is a revolutionary act. It's revolutionary because it opens up a new space for civic participation. Yes? In the process, he said, in the process of filming in public spaces, there also emerges a reclamation of public space by the people. And again, this is very important in contexts like Syria, where public space is monopolized by the state. Yes? And here, it's not just about Syria. Here we begin to think of situations like Hong Kong or China, even. And Iran, definitely Iran as well. Yeah. These are environments where public space is politically monopolized by the regime. And certain acts that we might consider to be innocent and apolitical seem to be threatening to these regimes. So in that situation, to film in that situation, you are also reclaiming public space, yeah? Then Chad Elias talks about aesthetics. And these aesthetics are important, he says. He says these images are shaky, they're moving, they're chaotic. But in a sense, the chaos of these images stands in contrast to the stable and choreographed behavior that the regime tries to the image that the regime tries to create. So of course the regime in Syria is an expert at choreographing demonstrations of obedience. Yeah, demonstrations of obedience to the regime. So it will of course announce, okay, tomorrow everyone will go to the streets and demonstrate their support for the government. And then everyone will of course feel obliged to go to the streets and say, yes, we support Assad and whatever. And this will be broadcast on Syrian state TV and broadcast in Iranian television and Russian television, state television, for example. And these images will be very choreographed and shiny and steady, professionally made. So Chad Elias is saying that the contrast of that are the aesthetics or that this new, let's say, democratic footage exists in, yes? Shaky, chaotic, pixelated. It can't be controlled. And whereas people had to be choreographed by the regime to show their support for it, here there's no choreography. It's very reactive. It's very spontaneous. And then the last point Chad Elias says is that the low resolution quality of these images and the way they're distributed, online distribution on YouTube or on wherever, all over the net, it's an alternative model of image production and dissemination that exists outside of the state's control, yes? And in doing so, it also exists outside of the commercial idea of image production and dissemination. So you can see some parallels to the Third Cinema Manifesto here. I'd like to show you an extract of a film made by a Syrian... This is the last extract I'm showing you. So, an extract of a film made by a Syrian filmmaker called Osama Mohammed. And he made this in collaboration with a Syrian Kurdish filmmaker called Siam Bedir Khan. The film is called Silvered Water, Syria Self-Portrait. And like the film from Argentina we saw at the beginning, this film is made up of a video that was filmed by other people, yes? So the film is made up of thousands of videos that were shot by Syrian civilians. And they edit them together to create, to give you an example of the Syrian experience at that time, 2012, I think it was made in. Okay, so we're just going to see an extract of that. I guess the last point I want to make is this is a feature film that was screened at film festivals and it's available on YouTube now to buy for a fee. But it's an example of an independent film that's made out of the cell phone pixelated footage. So I think some very interesting concepts emerge in relation to the question, is there a militant cinema of today? And can we consider, to what extent can we consider, the citizen pixelated video to be a new or contemporary militant cinema? That's it. Thank you very much.
So you have some time to answer some questions, right?
I have time to answer questions.
Okay. Yeah.
I have a question about point number 4 of Chad Elias's theory.
Yes.
It was about the distribution, and I don't know, I compared it to the situation in Iran, and what I've been witnessing is that, yes, of course, the images that we have speak for themselves and are very important. Other than that, we don't have anything. But I also witnessed a lot of people misusing them for their own cause, especially from like right-wing or monarchist people. I don't know, did Chad Elias or people from this cinematic background think about this issue, or are there debates about this, or how can we handle these problems as activists? And
I guess you're talking about the situation where some people who perhaps don't have the best intentions decide to use this activist or citizen produced images for their own causes, is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Yeah. So these are people, for example, who are not with the regime, but what they want to see is not better than the regime, right? Yeah. I don't know if Chad Elias specifically talks about this. It's like anywhere, in any political context, when once you have a situation where there is chaos and a challenge to the order that the authority imposed, there will always be people who will exploit the chaos for their own political purposes. Syrians talk about this. So in Syria, in the context of an armed uprising against the dictatorship in Syria, there was the entry of a third a third side, which became known as the Islamic State, you know, ISIS. And yes, ISIS is an example, I think, it's a good example of what you're talking about. It's an example of a third entity, let's say, that does not support the regime, but does not support the democratic uprising either. And yes, part of ISIS are very interesting because actually they created their own audiovisual propaganda. And in their propaganda, they made use, they appropriated images that were shot by ordinary citizens and civil society activists in order to further their own cause. I mean, yeah, to answer your question, do people talk about it? Yes, they talk about it. How do they deal with it? It's just a difficult situation. I mean, in Syria, a lot of video activists were arrested, were detained and tortured by ISIS, as well as by the regime. And you know, then there emerge, for the Syrian revolutionary, there emerges two fronts then. So the front against the regime, and then a front against this third invading side. That is not indigenously Syrian, by the way. That's, ISIS have their origins from an organization that emerged in Iraq called Al-Qaeda in Iraq, or AQA. But anyway, I mean, it's just a messy situation, and if there is a struggle against the misappropriation of this footage, it's a struggle that has to be fought in disinformation busting. Yeah. So the works of activist works that attempt to debunk or disprove the disinformation that's being created by these third-party actors. Yeah. On this topic, next week I'm giving a presentation specifically about a Syrian activist collective, and part of the work that they do is dissecting and dismantling disinformation through an audiovisual process. That will be, when's that happening?
That Thursday. Will be
next week on Thursday.
15th.
Yeah,
15th. Okay, alright. So, yeah, tune in for that if you're around.
I had another question. Yeah. I think it was like the second slide or something where you discussed how these, I forgot their names, but basically the first militant cinema and their practice with these little film viewings,
yes,
and how they were connected internationally. I was just thinking if there was some critique towards it being a little bit elitist, because on one hand they tried to address like the working class and like revolutionary subjects, but like revolutionary subjects usually don't have the resources to sit into a viewing of a 6-hour-long movie, and I was just wondering if this discourse happened and what the outcome of it was.
Yes, this discourse exists. A critique of the Third Cinema Manifesto, yeah. Some people have critiqued the manifesto with that exact point. And their point was basically that if you want to create a third cinema by, if the average third world citizen is oppressed and deprived of education, let's say deprived of a formal education, or deprived of an education in how to make films, and deprived of the language, understanding the language of filmmaking, then how can there be a third cinema? This manifesto becomes elitist, because you have to, in order to create an alternative cinema, you have to have filmmakers to create that cinema. So yes, there is that critique. However, I think part of the... There was another manifesto written by a Cuban filmmaker called Julio García Espinosa, and that manifesto is called For an Imperfect Cinema. And his argument, his manifesto, the main point of it, the main message is that cinema doesn't have to be perfect, yes? He was arguing that the third world citizen can be a filmmaker, and it will be, at the beginning, we will see this these films as imperfect. They're full of editing mistakes, they're not, footage is not unfocused, you know, all sorts of glitches and mistakes exist. But he said it doesn't matter. This is the expression, that cinema, that imperfect cinema, is an expression of the third world citizen, and therefore it's genuine, yes? And cinema should go in that direction. That was his manifesto. So if you like, you can, maybe to complete the third cinema manifesto, you can combine it with the with Espinosa's manifesto for an imperfect cinema. But on that point, that's why I believe Chad Elias's manifesto is quite powerful, because Chad Elias recognizes that the creation of a new audiovisual culture is not actually, doesn't have to be by trained filmmakers, yes? In fact, in its most purest form, it's created by the average person using completely unprofessional tool and distributed in a completely makeshift, unprofessional way. Yeah. Also, you asked about the length of the six-hour film. So when Solanas and Gatino screened these films to audiences, they did not show the whole film in one go. They were divided into sections, and they would stop the projector and discuss and strategize in between the screenings.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes.
Thank you for the presentation. In the beginning, like the first manifesto you showed was from the late 60s, right?
Yes, 1968.
So in that part, I had to think about the Laval Decree, that was a law that prohibited the people in the French African colonies to encourage themselves in any way. And I think that started in 1934 or something.
Okay.
And I wondered if you know of any other laws that go in this direction, and also if there were any, because it also lasted until the 60s, if there were any movements that challenged like hegemonic narratives or the colonial power through self-representation before the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about Africa specifically?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll be honest. Africa's not my specialism of research, and you know, there may be someone here who might have knowledge about that. But what I know is I know that in the 60s there emerged. There was the formation of a pan-African filmmaking collective. I can't remember exactly the title, but something like Fipaski or something. And they were making films that were, you know, these were African films made by African people about African, you know, the African experience. But to my knowledge, and I could be mistaken, but as far as I know, these films were not explicitly militant, like Solanas and Gatino's work, but they were political. They were undeniably political. But I think they were more subtle, yes? So I think there was an attempt to express political sentiment in quite sophisticated ways, in very subtle yet powerful ways, yes. So I can, for example, think of
Rihanna Rose, le nom de cette poinçon, the dynamic sound.
Shit. Fuck it, no. That's crap. That's crap. That's crap.
That was amazing.